Welcome to MoCo's Most Famous, Montgomery Community Media's newest podcast. We're coming to you from our podcast studio in Rockville, Maryland. My name is Joe Yashiroff. I am the Director of Content and Operations here at MCM. And really happy to have Doug Kammerer, Chief Meteorologist for NBC4, actually Storm Team 4, here with us today. Yes. Doug, how are you doing?
Fantastic. Beautiful day today. We actually got some sunshine.
How about that? So my first question is, what is the deal with the weather? That's the best I can come up with. What's the deal? What's going on?
What's the deal with the weather? Great question. And I love the fact that we get so many different kinds of weather here. I mean, we're living in the Mid-Atlantic, living in the D.C. area. We really have every kind of weather you can imagine. It's really fantastic. I mean, and that's why, you know, I've been offered jobs in places like Miami or California. And, you know, no thank you. I want weather. I want a forecast weather. So if it's sunny today, I know we're talking about a possible snowstorm coming up the next couple of days. Or we've got severe weather coming in the spring. Or we've got a possible hurricane coming up the coast in the summertime. Severe weather is something that we see a lot of, and I'll take every bit of it.
So you'd rather be here than in California, where every day you can say, "Hey, it's 80 and sunny today."
Yeah, I don't want to mail in my forecast. I mean, you've seen them where the golfers out there. Oh, it's gonna rain this afternoon, just so you can go out and play some golf. And of course, there's never any rain out that way. So that's not for me. I want significant weather. I want constant weather. I want to be able to predict it. I want to be able to see it coming, and I want to live it. I love getting out in the elements too. So. Big thing for me.
Well, we've had quite a string of weather. Let's just start talking about the rain last year. Yeah. How do you explain what happened last year with the amount of rain that we had?
Yeah, really incredible. We were moving from a La Nina into an El Nino year, and I think that really contributed to that. We had a lot of moisture coming in from the Pacific, from the Gulf of Mexico, making its way up into our area, and really just the pattern set up in such a way that we just continued to get storm after storm, and not just storm after storm. We continued to get big storm after big storm. So we had I believe we set a record last year, and don't quote me on this, but we had about 20 events last year where we had over an inch of rain. Hmm. That's just incredible. So we set the all-time record high or record rainfall, close to 70 inches of rain for the entire year. That's just amazing. So that was a situation where you just continue to watch storm after storm after storm come in all the way from January right on through the end of December. I mean, really, really a record that's tough to break, and we did it last year.
It was really remarkable, the amount of rain. I think I saw something that said Benjamin Harrison, I think, was the president last time we had anywhere close to that amount of rain, and sometime in the 1800s.
1800s. I believe 1882.
Something like that.
So we beat that record. So that record has stood the test of time for sure.
Now, is this part of, and I don't know if you want to get into climate change and all that, because some people consider that controversial.
Sure.
I consider it science. Some people make it political. Mm-hmm. But how much of that, in your opinion, is a part of climate change?
I think a lot. I think what we're seeing right now is, you know, every storm that we do have has a little bit more moisture in it. The atmosphere is a little bit warmer, meaning it can hold a little bit more water vapor, meaning we get a little bit more rain with each storm. So I do think that contributed to the record. Now, you look back at a storm, you know, the storm season like 1882, we don't really know what was happening back then. So well over 100 years ago. So I'd love to see what happened in those years. But if you still look at some of the wettest years, we're getting up there in the top 10. The number of wettest years just continues to grow. And most of them have now happened since the year 2000, especially some of the warmest years as well. Our top 10 warmest years, I think 9 of them have happened since the year 2000. I mean, it's really incredible. Over the last 5 years, 4 out of the top 5 warmest years ever on record were from the last 5 years. So, you know, it just keeps going and going. We're going to continue to see warming. We're going to continue to see more rainfall. We're going to continue to see more storms. And we'll continue to see snow as well. You know, that's kind of a misnomer. Oh, global warming. Wait a second. We still have the polar vortex to talk about. We still have the snow to talk about. We're still going to get those big storms, and we're still going to get a lot of cold air. However, the duration of that cold air is not going to be as long.
So there's really no debating the science, correct?
Exactly, right.
Then the people that do, I guess, are making it a political thing. But in terms of the numbers are there, and it's really, you don't have to be a scientist to kind of figure that out.
Yeah,
just,
I mean,
just so I'm clear.
You just take a look at carbon dioxide, and you look at, it as a warming gas. I mean, the more we put into the atmosphere, the more we're going to see warmer temperatures. So it tends to trap heat. It's bringing more heat into the environment, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
Does it make you angry when you hear people say, debate whether it's happening or not?
Yeah, most of the time when people debate it, though, they're throwing facts that just are not real, and you know that they're not the correct facts, or they're cherry picking the data. So yeah, it does kind of upset you a little bit when you know you've got a 96% or 97% of scientists out there, climate scientists, agree in climate change, and at the same time you've got a 3% that are very vocal that for some reason we in the media tend to when we go to journalism school, we're taught that you have to give equal time to both sides. Well, when you have 97% on one end and 3% on the other, and you're giving them equal time, unfortunately, that's where I think things get a little clouded.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about NBC4. You've been there since 2010.
Yep.
You took over for a weathered legend, Bob Ryan, right. And I know you have a history with him, and we're going to get into that. I want to know, what is it like working at NBC4, the dominant station for the last several years, and also the dominant weather team? You have such a commitment to weather.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is our commitment to weather. I absolutely love working there. Anything that I need as far as, weather-wise, the station is more than happy to give to us. I mean, we've put so much money into our weather product to make it the weather station. I mean, we really are. Storm Team 4 is really where it's at as far as weather is concerned, because every single one of us, we're all meteorologists. I'm a certified broadcast meteorologist from the American Meteorological Society. There's not many of us in the area. We've got a big team. We've got 5-6 people on our team, which is a big team for this area as well. And we cover it 24/7, whether it's on NBC4 or WTOP. It's something that we all love. I mean, if you look at who we've got and Chuck Bell, I mean, Chuck Bell wanted to do this at an early age. He ended up going to Oklahoma, one of the best schools in the country for weather, obviously studying tornadoes and severe weather in the Oklahoma area. You got Amelia Draper, who, went to Penn State, one of the best schools in the country for, they actually do a lot of northeast snowstorms and things like that. There. I went to the University of Northern Colorado. I love Colorado. I miss Colorado. If it had an ocean, that might be someplace where I might end up in life. But, we've got a really good team, and I really just think it's fantastic. Lauren Ricketts is great as well. You can feel her passion for weather. Samara Theodore on the weekends always wanted to do weather. So, this is a real passionate group that we've got here.
What gets you excited weather-wise? What event it feels like a Super Bowl to you?
A blizzard, a big snowstorm. And I say blizzard, but it can even be a situation like we had just a couple of weeks ago, where we're talking about snow over to freezing rain, sleet, and ice just over to plain rain. I mean, those are the toughest storms to forecast in this area. This area is a very tough area to forecast for, and it's because we do get so many different things. I mean, you look at just our area alone from just in Montgomery County. I mean, just take a look at the difference in Montgomery County from a place like Bethesda to a place like Damascus. I mean, what a change. You take that ice storm a couple of weeks ago, no problem. Downtown Bethesda, Rockville, no problem at all. Damascus got hit extremely hard. Power outages, tons of trees down. Really quite amazing the structural damage that ice did with a quarter inch or over a quarter inch of ice. And that's because Damascus has that elevation of a couple hundred feet higher than the rest of the county. Really made a huge difference. So even in one county in our area, the weather changes. And that's why for us folks down county in Bethesda, we get out of school a lot more because of what's happening up county.
And you mentioned the schools, and that's a very controversial subject for many. Some people mock the decisions, oh, no school today.
Right.
What they don't realize, I think, is that if you're in Bethesda, as you just said, it can be a lot different in somewhere in other parts of Montgomery County. So I know you take that seriously, but how do you explain to people that, one part of the county is different than the other, and that's why they're making these decisions?
All you have to do is drive the county. I mean, it really is quite amazing what you see when you move out. I mean, you have the I-270, 270 corridor, and you think, all right, that's the way it is the rest of the county, but that's not it. I mean, if you go 5 miles either way in that corridor, you're in the country. I mean, these are back roads. I mean, these are roads that are not highly traveled. These are all secondary roads. They're all two-lane roads. You get one of those lanes maybe blocked because of a tree down, or you get one of these lanes blocked because of the snow plows can't get that way. You're going to have a big problem for the rest of the county, and that's why I think the county does a good job of either a two-hour delay or closing. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. A lot of places, it's school district by school district that closes. For us, Montgomery County is the entire school district. So you get one bad area, say Damascus, and the rest of us get closed as well.
Right. It is not easy being a meteorologist. Some people think it is, and some people, they say, oh, they got that one wrong, and they make fun. Explain how difficult it is to make an accurate prediction. People want to know, how does this affect me? Am I going to have school? Am I going to have work? Right. How much snow? Explain how difficult that is.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I mean, if you think about where we live, there are so many factors in our weather. You've got the Chesapeake Bay, you've got the Atlantic Ocean, you've got the Blue Ridge, you've got the Appalachians off to the west. Really is quite amazing. Even in our immediate area, you've got the fall line. We're obviously, you have great falls. That's called the fall line. I-95 built on the fall line. And if you follow the fall line all the way up through the Northeast, you hit the big cities. And the reason all the cities were built on that, Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, up towards Boston, they were built there because that's as far as the ships could make their way in, because then next thing you know, you're moving up in elevation and you've got rocky rivers. So, the Potomac, you can only go as far as Washington, D.C. You can't go anymore. But the same thing in Baltimore, same thing in Philadelphia up the Delaware River. You can't go too much farther up from Delaware. It's all tidal at that point. Once it becomes non-tidal, you start to get some elevation, and that's what really makes forecasting hard. That's why you hear me on the air constantly talking about I-95 corridor. South and east of I-95, this one's going to be sleet to rain. North and west of I-95, this one's going to be snow to sleet to rain. I-95 really is a delineation mark between colder weather to the north and west and warmer weather to the south and east, where you've got those influences of the bay, of the Potomac River itself being a bigger part. The Potomac does get very big, very wide down into parts of southern Maryland. And then obviously the Atlantic Ocean plays a big part too. So it's a little bit more of a marine influence closer to the bay, and a little bit more of a continental influence closer to the north and west. You add in there the mountains. We had a day the other day, and this happens quite often, where we are socked in with clouds east of the Blue Ridge. And you're looking at temperatures 45 degrees in Rockville, where just on the other side in Winchester, it's sunny, 65 degrees and beautiful. But the Blue Ridge, even though they're only, 2,000 feet, they have a huge impact on our weather when the wind is the right way. So many different factors play in. That's why my job is so hard, so challenging, and so much fun.
I love that. In terms of prognosticating, we talked about the pressure of it. You seem to thrive on it.
Yeah.
Do you have to have that to be a meteorologist? I mean, you kind of almost have to.
Yeah.
Say bring it on, right?
Absolutely. You have to say bring it on 100%, because that's what we live for. We have to thrive in those high stress environments. When we've got a severe thunderstorm warning, or let's go back to 2012 when we got the derecho coming down and barreling down our necks. We saw that derecho that came through our area in the evening hours, and I literally was watching that for 12 hours make its way across from Chicago down through the Ohio Valley, through the Appalachians, right on into our area. And that's an area where you can't be scared, or you can't be worried about what's happening with you. You've got to be able to go on the air and express confidence in the fact that you know what's happening, that you're trying to protect people. Now, at the same time, that particular storm, I was scared to death for my family. That storm I saw had 80 mile an hour winds all along that path, and we had 86 mile per hour winds out towards Reston. That was one of the biggest ones we see, 80 mile an hour winds here in Rockville. So, really quite amazing what that storm was doing. And as much as I'm trying to protect my own family, I'm trying to protect families out there as well from storms such as that.
That's interesting you bring up your family. I don't think people at home ever think about that, but I mean, you're a human being, you have your own family to worry about, and you're also trying to protect and inform everybody else out there.
The hardest part of that?
What's that?
As much as I love snow and I love being on the air during snowstorms, I'd rather be home with my kids playing in the snow. Yeah. I mean, I sled. I get out there with the kids all the time. So when there's big storms, daddy's got to go in. I think that's the hardest part for me doing, severe weather or doing that kind of weather is, you do want to kind of protect your family. But at the same time, I know that there's another cause out there.
Maybe we can arrange for you to do your weathercast remotely from the house, from the
sledding
hills.
That would work. I would do that in a second.
technology obviously has changed everything. Clearly, it has helped, made things easier, but that doesn't mean it makes it easy. So explain how technology has changed what you do over the last few years.
Yeah, I say the biggest change is just in the fact that, when I was coming up 20 years ago, we did a 3-day or a 5-day forecast. We went to about a 7-day forecast about 15 years ago, and that held for up until about 5 to 8 years ago, where all of a sudden we're doing a 10-day forecast. We do a 10-day forecast now because we truly believe we have skill out that far. Now, if you're looking at, let's say I've got a birthday party, today's Thursday, we know what's going to happen this weekend. My 10-day forecast also has next weekend, and you've got a big birthday party next weekend. You're not going to look at that forecast for next Saturday, a week from Saturday, and say, oh, look, it's 70 and sunny, and never look at it again. That's going to change most likely a little bit. Sometimes there are bigger changes, especially in a stormy pattern like what we've got right now. But we really feel, you know, technology has brought us far enough where we can predict at least the trends out that far that really help us to move farther. You know, some of the biggest things is increase methodology in the modeling that we have, the modeling capabilities, which helps us with storms. Satellites are huge. We just had two huge satellites. You have GOES 16, GOES 17, which now are encompassing the entire part of North America. And what we can see on those satellites now is really something that we've never been able to see before, whether it be from fog, fires, lightning, thunderstorms, and severe weather. I mean, we can track severe thunderstorms now from 30,000 miles up, where, you know, before it was just on radar, and before radar, it was just line of sight. So now we've actually got, you know, the ability to track these storms in a way that we've never been able to track them before.
I rely on your 10-day forecasts in spring, summer, and fall because I play golf. I know you play golf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking, saying, all right, this is going to be a good golf day. That's going to be a good and I'm sure people have reached out to you about that. Doug, can I play golf? Or Doug, can I do this? You get that a lot, I'm assuming?
Oh, I get that all the time. You know, and one of the best ways people reach me is through my Facebook page, you know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. I get that constantly. Oh, my family's flying in on Friday from Cincinnati, and we got this storm. Are they going to get in on time? And that's really the best thing about social media. You know, years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? I mean, you're maybe calling the station. You're maybe getting to the person that you're actually trying to get to without getting an email. But now you can go on Twitter, you can go on Facebook, and you can reach those people that that you see on television every day. And people do that with me all the time.
We're talking with Doug Kammerer, Storm Team 4's chief meteorologist. So I mentioned the golf. I don't know if you're a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, but there was an episode, and I know you know what I'm talking about, where there Larry was playing golf, and the weatherman had said it was going to rain the next day, and it was sunny and 80.
Yep.
And so Larry accused the weatherman to his face of changing the forecast so he could have the golf course to himself.
Right.
And
that's kind of what I was referencing a little bit earlier. I mean, you know, in California, I think Steve Martin had a movie, you know, which was kind of similar to that as well. Yeah, that's kind of amazing. People think, oh, you must have a deal with Home Depot, or you must have a deal with Safeway or Giant, because everybody's running to the store to get milk and bread, and, you know, you got to have some kind of a, you know, skin in the game on that one. But no, that's not the way it is. If I could have it my way, I want sunshine when I'm at the beach, and I want storms when I'm home. It doesn't always work that way.
And snow when you ski.
And snow when I ski, absolutely.
All right, we're going to talk about growing up. You're from Herndon, went to Herndon High, so you grew up in this area. Can you tell us about your childhood and growing up in this area?
Yeah, I was actually born in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
You know, there's not many of us.
No.
Not many of us native Washingtonians. I was born in Washington, D.C. We lived in Prince George's County for a number of years. That's where my family grew up. My parents went to Bladensburg High School. My father went to University of Maryland. Tried to walk on there on the basketball team and actually got a call back and never went. And to this day, I'll never understand why he didn't go back for that. But, you know, growing up in this area was great, living in Fairfax County most of my middle school and high school years. You know, I loved this area, and I loved watching the news. I loved watching the weather. You know, I loved watching Bob Ryan. I loved watching Doug Hill and Topper and Sue Palka. I mean, I grew up watching them. And, you know, at the time, it was great because, you know, each one of them came on at slightly different times. So if you're looking for a snowfall forecast, you know, Bob's on 11:16, Doug's on 11:17, you know, Topper might be on 11:18. You're switching back and forth trying to get everybody's snowfall maps. A little bit easier now, once again, because you got social media, so you don't have to change the channel, everyone. You can just leave it on NBC4.
There you go.
But that's what I was doing as a kid. You know, that's kind of my love and my passion for weather. I've had that since a very early age.
And there's a story with Bob Ryan when you were in school?
So everything for me was weather. You know, know, I just absolutely loved it. Since I was 8 years old, I wanted to do the weather, and I got my license. I'm 16 years old. I contacted Bob. I had a math project I had to do, and it just said, you know, find a job that incorporates math and do a project on that person. So I found not only person, but my favorite person in Bob Ryan. And I called Bob, and he let me come into the station. And, you know, I did my math report on Bob Ryan. He put me in front of the chroma key for the first time ever, gave me some maps. You know, I'm in the same studio, Jim Vance, Dorian Gensler right there. I got Bob. I got George Michael. I mean, that was one of the highlights of my life, really, up at the time. And then, you know, you think to yourself, oh, I'll be here one day. Now, little did I know, I'll be there one day. In that same studio, at that same chroma key, but that was really special, and that was really something great for Bob to do. And that's why, you know, for me, I always try to pass that on. There's so many people and so many kids that contact me and, you know, say they have the passion for weather, and, you know, it's people like Bob and others in my career that have given me the shot. So I want to make sure I do the same for others as well.
So that had to be surreal. So you're doing a project with Bob Ryan, and then several years later, you replaced Bob Ryan on NBC4. I mean, how often do you think about how wild that is?
It's incredibly wild. I mean, you understand the business, how, you know, whether it's contractually, or you just don't get timing like that very often. It's very rare. The timing has to be absolutely perfect. And it was for this. And it was really fantastic for me when I got the phone call, you're going to be the next chief meteorologist at NBC4. I'll forever remember where I was driving along the Schuylkill Expressway in Philadelphia, one of the most notorious roads in the world. Thank goodness I didn't have an accident, because, you know, it was one of those things where I just couldn't believe it. I thought my agent was playing a joke on me for a second. Yeah, it was really was surreal to get that phone call and to hear those words.
Great stuff from Doug Kammerer. We'll be back with MoCo's Most Famous after this.
MCM, your community media center, is making Montgomery County a great place to live through programs like 21 This Week. Montgomery County's hardest-hitting political talk show keeps you up to date with the local political scene. Montgomery Community Media. Our middle name is Community.
Welcome back to MoCo's Most Famous. I am Joe Yashiroff, and I'm here with Doug Kammerer, Chief Meteorologist for Storm Team 4 on NBC4. Doug, we were talking about growing up in the area and replacing Bob Ryan after doing a project with him. You were part of a team at Channel 4. Mm-hmm. George Michael had passed away, but you were working with Jim Vance and Doreen Gensler, and that had to be something that was also surreal for you.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, just walking in there every day and seeing Vance, you know, that guy, just an incredible human being. I mean, just a great man, and just the coolest guy you'll ever meet in your life. You know, him and Doreen welcomed me. Sitting next to Doreen every day, I mean, you know, she just made it so easy for me, and they both did. I mean, it was just so easy to walk in there every day and do my job, and they kind of welcomed me into the family fairly quickly, and that was tough. You know, you go from somebody like Bob Ryan, who'd been there for 26 years, and to welcome in a new guy right off the street, somebody that they had no idea, they didn't know, and to welcome me like that. Was really fantastic. It really was.
I want to know about you. So you grew up in Herndon, but you've lived in Montgomery County for a while, so I guess since you've been back.
Yeah.
The show's called MoCo's Most Famous. I want to know, what is it about Montgomery County that you like?
We moved to Montgomery County. You know, when I moved back here, I was hoping to move back to Fairfax County. Obviously, that's, you know, where I grew up. We moved to Montgomery County. Went one thing for schools. I had two kids at the time. My kids were very young when we moved here. And it's so much easier for me to get to and from work. And we settled in Bethesda. I love Bethesda. I love the area. I live in an area where, you know, I've got the nice community feel of my house, but at the same time, I can walk into downtown Bethesda, take the kids down there, take the kids to the parks. It was just a very, very nice area for us to be able to raise our kids, and we were excited about that. You know, at the time, they were both in strollers. My son was walking at the time. He was three. My daughter was just about a year old when we moved down here, and we were able to take them on the sidewalks and roll them down the street and get to the Fire Engine Park down there along Arlington Boulevard in Bethesda, and they love that. I mean, and they know that now. They're now 12 and 9. I mean, we've been here now close to 9 years, and they don't know anything else. They know Bethesda's home. They know Montgomery County is home. The Chevy Chase area is home. So this is something for us that, you know, we've really grown to love the community, love the county, because now I'm all over the place in the county with kids games, man. My goodness gracious. Your kids start playing sports. Your weekends are no longer your weekends. Absolutely. And you're going to every part of the county, whether it's baseball or soccer or basketball or football. You know, my kids do it all. So, you know, I'm constantly out in the county.
Also, one of the beauties of Montgomery County is you're close to the city, you're close to the mountains, you're kind of not far, shall we say, 20 minutes from everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's another thing about living in this area. I mean, you know, you look at Montgomery County, man, I hop on 270, it's a very quick drive for me to get to Ski Liberty up in Pennsylvania. I mean, I take the kids skiing a couple of times a year. That's fun. At the same time, I want to get over to the Chesapeake Bay. I've got family that live along the bay, and, you know, I see them in about an hour's time, too. And if I want to go into the mountains and go check out Harper's Ferry, I can do that. It's really a great spot. I really love living in this area. It is just so easy to get to all those places. You know, we go to Ocean City, Maryland during the summertime, and that's another. If you time it right, you know, it's not a bad drive. If you don't time it right, it's the worst drive in the history of mankind.
That's true.
But, you know, all in all, we really do love living here.
We've mentioned a couple of sports. So you ski.
Mm-hmm.
I know you play golf. We played one time. I don't know if either of us set the course record, but I think
probably not.
I think if either of us played a little more, I think we'd be pretty good.
I was really good until I had kids.
Yeah, you can hit the ball a long way.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have kids and you no longer get to play anymore. Like
right.
I said, your time is not your own. So I was living down. I started playing golf back in 98, 99, my first job, and got my second job in Jacksonville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
My first job is in Macon, Georgia.
Right.
Playing golf in Macon, Georgia was very hard because your hands are so sweaty. It's so humid down
there.
Swamp,
right?
Oh, I lost golf clubs because they simply just flew out of my hands.
Oh, my God. Not because you were throwing them.
Not because I was throwing. No, absolutely
okay,
not.
Got
absolutely
it.
Not. Jacksonville was great, you know, but Jacksonville, my job down there, I was the weekend guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the entire weekend shift. So I did Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night. I was there all weekend long. I had Monday through Friday off.
Excuse me?
I had Monday through Friday off.
What?
Now, I had a second job. I did landscaping,
okay.
But I played a lot of golf with my buddies,
mm-hmm.
and I started getting pretty good. I lived in Orlando for the next 3 years. I had a job down there, and I played a lot of golf down there. So I started getting pretty good. Moved to Philadelphia. I'm still thinking, hey, this is great. And then, you know, kids came along, and you're not going to play 18 holes of golf, sweetheart. And, you know, she called me sweetheart when she would say that. But no.
So you play, I know you play hoops, mm-hmm. play baseball. What's your favorite sport?
Right now it's basketball. You know,
okay.
Growing up, I played both, you know, baseball and basketball in college. I played baseball in college, baseball, basketball in high school. But basketball is a way I can get out. I get out to play basketball about 3-4 days a week. You know, it's really a great release for me, a great stress relief, and, you know, really helps. And, I love getting out there and playing. If I could play baseball more, I would definitely do so. The time constraints just don't allow you to do it. But, you know, softball, too. I'd love to get out there and play some softball because, you know, I can hit the softball a little bit. And, you know, that would be a good feeling. But I cannot make those 7 o'clock games if I'm on the air at 6 p.m.
Just not enough time in
nope.
the day. Now, beyond playing sports, I know you like to watch sports. You're a fan of all the teams. You're a big Caps fan.
Huge.
Nats, Wizards, Skins, all
Absolutely.
Of them?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, growing up here, obviously, Redskins were the number one game in town. You know, I'd love to see the Skins come back to prominence. You know, we really do. We need so much help on that team. But, you know, I'm excited for the future there. The Capitals winning the Stanley Cup last year was just phenomenal. I just to ride that ride with the Caps. I was down there for so many games, and especially for the playoffs. The station NBC4 really allowing me to become part of the fan experience. I mean, I was down there for most of the home games. That was just incredible. Nats. I mean, having a team here when I grew up, I was rooting for the Orioles.
Right.
You know.
Me too.
I was going up to Memorial Stadium, and you know, Eddie. You know, that was some great stuff.
It was 33rd
Street. Yeah, exactly. You know, but having the Nats here. And having a hometown team and having the guys that we have here. I mean, you have guys like Ryan Zimmerman who have just been with the team forever and really have just been D.C. I mean, those are like D.C. guys. And they're really easy guys to root for, I think. So, yeah, it's great to have those teams here.
By the time that people listen to this, this may have already happened. But Bryce Harper, are you a little tired of this whole situation?
Absolutely. I don't, you know, too much for us. I think we can do a lot better things with our money. Mm-hmm. And number two, yeah, just, you know, and I don't know if it's him, but come on, man. If you want to be the highest paid ever, fine, I understand that. But just sign so we don't have to hear about it anymore.
I blame his agent as much, Scott Boras.
Absolutely.
I think it's more about his ego than Brent. They both have egos.
Boras is notorious. For that
yes,
kind of
he
stuff,
is. To so. Me, you know, easy for me to say, but if you can get $300 million and be happy and have a chance to win a World Series, why would you want to get $320 million to play with a team that has no chance? I just don't understand that, but I've never been in that situation and probably never will be.
Right.
But I just don't understand it. $300 million is enough.
Yeah.
And if you have a chance to win, why not just go with that?
And you look at a guy that signed that $300 million contract to Manny Machado.
Yeah.
You know, that guy hit, I think, 297 last year or something like that. And you know, had just as many home runs. I mean, how does Bryce out? You know, getting paid more than Manny. I don't know how that goes.
Just please don't sign with the Phillies. That would make it very. I don't think he'll enjoy being in Philly. I know you know Philly.
I love Philadelphia. Yeah.
I don't know that Bryce will. If the first time he doesn't run out a ball to first base, I think he will not like Philly.
No, because they'll get right down. You know, if he had a season there like he did here last year, I mean, he was batting 167 for a good part of. I remember which month it was, April and May. You do that in Philadelphia, you know, you're going to get something thrown at you.
All right, here I'm going to do a 180. What the heck's the European model? It has nothing to do with catwalks, right? What is the European model?
No, the European model. This is great. So, you know, the European model and modeling in general really came into prominence with Hurricane Sandy. Al Roker mentioned the different models on the air. This was in 2012. Hurricane Sandy comes up, and the American models all had Hurricane Sandy missing the U.S. coastline. And the Europeans said, wait a second here. We've got this thing coming back and hitting the U.S. coast. And had it model run after model run, where, again, the American models just were not on board. And we all know what happened with Hurricane Sandy. So since then, everybody now, I think, you know, as viewers and listeners, understand that there are different models out there. So the European model is a model that is put together by the European weather agencies. And there's two of them, the European and the UK Met. So there's two models that come out of Europe. Those are the two best models in the world. Our models are far lacking. In comparison, unfortunately. We've got what's called the GFS. We've got a brand new model now, which is going to take over for the GFS called the FV3. In my opinion, and in the opinion of many meteorologists, it's not quite ready yet, but it's something that was going to go out soon. And it's supposed to be able to help us to close the gap between the Europeans and our modeling system so that we're not relying on the European model as much as we do. Because right now, when I make a forecast, anything past 3 to 4 days, I am heavily weighting my forecast on the European model.
You're not going to quiz me on this stuff, right? Because GFS, I can't keep track of all these letters and things. I mean, there won't be a quiz, right?
No, you're good. Geofluidic system. But
Sure. Okay, another term that we hear all the time, Doppler.
Yes.
Is Doppler just a fancy word for a computer, or is it a kind of computer? What the heck's a Doppler?
Doppler radar. So Doppler was actually a name that was coming from a person, Doppler, and that is actually a way that we can see rain or really anything that scatters the waves. So if you send out some Doppler waves or you send out radiation, that radiation is going to be scattered in one way, shape, or form and sent back to you. How much of that you receive back tells you how much rain you've got, how much snow you've got. But now, you know, Doppler is in radar in general. The technology has gotten so much better. I can now see sleet. I can now see hail. I can now see, you know, heavy rain opposed to a snowfall. Those are all things that we didn't see just a few years ago.
Okay, I want to talk to you about your style of broadcasting. So what you do is it's science, it's information. Mm-hmm. You're a broadcaster, obviously. Some of it has to be entertainment, though, too.
Absolutely,
you can't
just
sit there and just go through the numbers and be boring and then say, and today is going to be. So can you discuss kind of your style and your strategy on how you broadcast the weather?
Yeah, well, you know, we're on television. I mean, we really are trying to, you know, have some kind of an entertainment value. It's not the fact that, you know, I'm an entertainer. That's not what I'm out to do. If I was doing that, I'd be on the road somewhere 365 days a week and have a show in Vegas. You know, I like to have fun with what I do, and I think the passion that I have for weather comes through, and the joy that I have for what I do really is able to come through. So, you know, the personality thing, that's something that I think is when we have a lot of consultants in this business, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the consultants come in and they say, okay, people just want the facts. They just want to hear what the weather's going to be on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I disagree with that, and we've had that. We've gone back and forth with that a little bit. I think people want to see some personality. I think they want to have some fun. I think that's why NBC4 has been the number one station for so long, is because we have those personalities. We have those people that are going to have some fun with you. But at the same time, you know that when we've got a serious situation, we've got breaking news, you're going to turn to those same anchors that made you laugh the night before, but you're going to turn to them, or you're going to turn to me, who, you know, we had a good time when I'm doing backyard weather in Durwood. You know, I'm having a great time in somebody's backyard eating some food, but you're going to turn to me the next day when we got severe weather moving in.
Right. No, I totally agree with what you're saying. As a viewer, you know, I turn to NBC4 because you all are very good at what you do, obviously, but you also have this rapport, the great crosstalk, and it seems genuine. It really feels like a family, and I know that's you all stress that over there.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun working with the people we work with.
All right. I want to talk about some of your charitable. I know you do a lot of charity things.
Yep.
So talk about some of the charitable things that you do.
Yeah. You know, when I got here, the station came to me and said, what would you like to do? And they had a couple of things that were on the docket. A couple of the big ones that I do, longevity for lung cancer. I've been with them now for 6-7 years, and that's a dear and near to my heart. I've had grandparents that have died from lung cancer. It's been in my family. It's something that, you know, it's something that I look out for, especially with in my parents. That was a big one for me. I do the longevity walk. I do the longevity gala, the kidney walk. I do the kidney gala as well. That's a big one for me. Just seeing the, you know, how many people are exposed to this. I had a really good friend of mine, a best friend of mine, who was on the kidney waiting list for over 2 years. You know, there's 118,000 people out there waiting for some kind of an organ, and most of them are actually kidneys. It's really amazing, and we've all got two kidneys, and we can live with one, so that's kind of incredible, and lately, it's going to be Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I've done a lot with them in the past. I have not done a lot with them in the D.C. area. I'm really ramping up my game with that. My father passed away from leukemia just this past year. So it's something that is near and dear to my heart. And the first thing I'm doing is the Ryan Kerrigan Leukemia and Lymphoma Golf Tournament out there
great.
In Lansdowne. I think you probably know about that
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely. Ryan's a great guy.
Ryan's a fantastic guy. And to put his name on something like that is great. And I'm going to be out there for that coming up in May.
Being a broadcaster is busy. I mean, not only the hours, you know, that you spent at work, but the hours preparing for work, the charity stuff. Mm-hmm. How, I mean, do you sleep at all?
You know, that's a tough, you know, just today, I mean, doing this interview and then I'm going over to a school talk. I mean, that's another thing that I do. I love talking to kids. There's so many different reasons why, but, you know, when I was a kid in third grade, you know, I'll never forget the people that came in to talk to me. So now talking to third graders and fourth graders, hoping to make an impact on them and, you know, teaching them that you can do what you want in life. You know, if you've got a goal, you can make that happen, because that was me. Eight years old, I wanted to be a meteorologist, and I followed that dream, and sure enough, I'm a meteorologist at the same station I grew up watching. So, you know, if those kids have a goal, I want to make sure that they know that they can reach it no matter what stands in their way, because the only person really standing in your way is you. No matter who's telling you, you can't do it. You know, you're the only person that's looking back at you in the mirror. So I really feel that. That's why I love school talks. That's one of my biggest charities is kids and school talks. You know, it's not a charity that's got a name to it, but, you know, I try to talk to about 10,000 kids a year. You know, get out to, I was doing
10,000.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Today I'll talk to close to 200 kids.
That's great.
So every time I'm going out, I'm talking to a couple hundred kids at a time. So it's a lot of fun.
That's amazing. How long do you want to be doing the weather? Do you see yourself on NBC4 for 20 years? I mean, have you looked down that far?
That's the goal. You know, when you have kids, things change. You know, early in our careers, you're trying to get to the next spot. You're trying to make a little bit more money. You're trying to get into that bigger house. You're trying to, you know, get into a bigger television market. DC is it. You know, DC is one of the top markets in the country. NBC4, one of the top stations in the country. So I feel like I've gotten there. I feel like I'm in my hometown. This is where I've always wanted to be. I love doing the weather here, so I really don't foresee myself moving on. You know, there's Al Roker. Al, if you're listening, you know, that's the only job that, you know, I think that I would even entertain, and that's just because, you know, again, he's doing the weather, but he gets to have a lot of fun doing it as well. So I want to be someplace where I can have fun and really enjoy my time, and right now it's NBC4.
Great stuff from Emmy Award-winning meteorologist Doug Kammerer from NBC4. Doug, thank you so much for stopping by with us today on MoCo's Most Famous. My name is Joe Yashroff. I'd like to thank engineer Carolyn Ruskowskis, and we will see you next time on MoCo's Most Famous. Have a great day, everybody.